Okay, board, ready to go?
Okay. Absolutely.
I will call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting on this Tuesday, 7/31/12. Greetings to all. Thank you for your attendance. At this time, I would ask that you join the board as we honor our nation for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Okay. Okay, item three on the agenda is a public comment portion. This is an opportunity where members of the audience may address the board regarding a topic on today's agenda. I would like to call attention to a few of the slips that I do have here. There is on today's agenda a resolution that will be discussed later regarding confinement, and at that time, I would allow for public comment prior to any action on the board. So if you, those of you that have listed that you want to talk about confinement issues, if you want to hold those comments to that time, fine. If for some reason you need to leave earlier and cannot be here for that portion, you certainly are welcome to comment at this point. Okay? So at that, with that acknowledgement, is there anyone that would like to address the board regarding an item on today's agenda? Good. Come right up, Kathy, and announce your sit. You may be seated. Just state your name and just your city of residence. It's all that's necessary. Okay.
Well, I may have to leave early, as you indicated. I'm Catherine Fromm. I live at 3531 G.W. Carver. I live in rural Ames. For a long time, every issue involving the city and county traipsed through my yard. And I have a creek which deposits, actually sometimes it's depositing sediment, unfortunately, but water flows through the creek, which I have to Squaw Creek. So over not necessarily wanting to be in a position to learn a lot about creeks and issues regarding a water, I do know quite a bit. I am only here at this point because I may have to leave early, but I would like to say that I consider this to be a county that should be a neighborhood and a place of some refinement. And by refinement, I don't mean confinement of hogs. I really believe that we have serious issues in this state regarding the state of our rivers, which are maybe fifth from the bottom in terms of the amount of pollution in the rivers. Considerable if it's fifth from the bottom in terms of how bad it is. I see no reason why we should make this problem worse. I do realize that it is not within the purview of the Board of Supervisors to really dent the issue brought of having a hog confinement lot because all that power has been settled on the state. However, I believe the supervisors can issue a resolution which would reflect the sentiment, not the sediment, the sentiment of this county. And that would be that we do not propose to put more pollutants in the water and that we will try to endeavor to improve water quality. And I think that is an important issue, and I would be terribly disappointed if you all do not agree with my position. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy. Thank you for your comments. Is there anyone else that want to address the board at this time? Okay. Then
we got one more, Wayne.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't catch any.
Sorry, this is my first time here, so I don't know if this is the appropriate time or not.
But regarding
the Eighth Amendment to the property, nursing home.
You filled out the
card. Okay.
That's on here too, Wayne.
That's on here. That's on the agenda at later time. So, why don't you go ahead? I'll go ahead and allow this.
All right. Donald McDonald, Ames, Iowa, and I live on the other side of George Washington Carver from where the nursing home would be built. And in researching the LUP documents and the, I guess it was the Norris study that was done of the natural areas. I find that there's an area called Special Resource that runs right across the middle of where the nursing home would be situated. I tried contacting the planning board yesterday. I probably should have done it earlier, but I didn't get any response from them. I'd like to know more what Special Resource means. I did look it up on the website, and it seems to be things like Ada Hayden Park and bike trails. So I'm not sure what this one zone, and I've printed off the one sheet. It's on both the LUP documents on page 11 on one and I think 17 on the other. I'd like to know what that special resource is. I have walked the property because I had permission to hunt mushrooms, and it seems to be a very sandy soil, maybe similar to Los Hills. So I wonder if that was what was meant by special resource, but I don't know.
Thank you. All right. Hopefully those questions may be addressed at some point. I don't know if Charlie or the group that is proposing this change will be able to address that or not, but I think it is a reasonable request that we ought to be able to find some explanation for you. So
okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay. If there's no one else, then we will move to item number 4, which is the consideration of the minutes of 7/24/12.
Second.
It's been moved and second, the approval of the minutes. Are there any corrections or additions? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carries. Minutes are approved. Item number 5, Board. These are the consideration of personnel action. We have a couple additions to call your attention to. We need to add a new hire in CLP, effective 8/1/12. For Pershaun, P-E-R-S-H-A-U-N, Wise, W-I-S-E, hyphen Mathis, M-A-T-H-I-S, at $10.77 an hour. And we would need to add, Shelley, I see something say effective 8/7/12. Is that
that's Caitlin
for the payroll?
That's
is
another.
That for the second one?
Yeah.
Okay. And the second one, then, effective 8/7/12, is for Caitlin O'Loughlin at $10.77 an hour. So those are the two additions to the personnel.
Move approval of personnel.
Second.
It's been moved and second, the approval of personnel action. Hearing no further discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carries. Thank you. Okay. And then under consideration of claims, we have one addition, actually, well, it's two additions.
That's road closures.
Gotcha. Thank you for the clarification.
Yeah, we're still under a million.
Everything is okay.
So I'll move approval.
As a matter of fact, this was a good month.
I'm not going to move approval for anything over a million, but
right, this is a good month.
For under a million.
I'll second it.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the claims. Here, no further comment. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries. Yeah. Okay, now we're down to item 7 on the consent agenda. We need to add road closure, number 1308, number 1309, and number 1310 for road closure. And we need to add utility permits, 1316 and 1317.
I'll move approval of the consent agenda.
Second.
Noted.
Okay, it's been proposed and second, the approval of the consent agenda with noted changes. All those, this is a roll call. So, Toot?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton? Aye. Consent agenda is adopted. Okay. We're moving along. Okay. Item 8, public hearing items. We don't have any, so we move to item number 9 is additional items. The consideration of Resolution 1306, Fund Balance Resolution. Assistant Auditor Lisa Markley. And
good morning.
Good morning.
We have closed out our fiscal year, and by resolution of the board, any designations for fund balances need to be made for those funds. What I am proposing here is that we have assigned balances from the general fund in the amount of $56,990. That is for vehicle purchases that and changeovers that were done that were not be able to be paid for out of FY12 funds, and the sheriff had asked for these to be assigned. Rural fund balance, $74,000 of that is for vehicle purchases for the sheriff's office also, and then local option sales tax, $173,850 uncommitted. Those are assigned. We also have to, per GASB 54, assign the inmate commissary fund in the amount of $88,126 and the county attorney fine collection fund in the amount of $18,226. We also have restricted funds in the amount of $188,447, which is capital conservation acquisition and capital projects fund. These requirements are obviously from GASB 54. We have historically reserved funds anyway, or designated funds anyway, but now we need to formalize it by assignment and restriction.
I'll move approval of Resolution 1306.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded the approval of Resolution 1306. Are there additional questions or comments? Hearing none, Sanders?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Clinton, aye. Resolution 1306 is adopted. Thank you. Okay. Now we move on to the acknowledgement of receipt of the inventory report. Again, Assistant Auditor Lisa Markley.
I want to give you an update on the FY12 inventory review that was done. Our office provides this. For the last 3 years, we've been doing this. What we do is, as claims are submitted every month, every week, every biweekly, if the item's over $500, we place an inventory tag on it. If it's over $5,000, it goes on our capital assets for depreciation. In February or March, we send out an inventory list to each department. We want them to verify it. We want them to say whether they still have it, whether they traded it, whether they sold it, what has happened to the items. And then we take those lists and we randomly choose a percent of those items to go out individually from our department and review and make sure we can identify them. The verifications have been signed by the department and the auditor's staff. The overall findings this year, the results are as follows. There were 24 departments that were audited, and of those 24 departments, we're including Assessor, EMA, E911. We do have their inventory lists also. 145 items were verified, and 13 were not verified. The reasons for the non-verification range from anywhere from the tag falling off to they were sold, they were transferred, they were junked, without filling out an inventory card to tell us those things. In the process of it this year, we decided to do a little bit more departmental training, possibly, as to the importance of keeping tabs on where things head to when they go away. So we're going to try to have some more either guidelines or individual meetings with departments to talk about the importance of filling out the inventory tags. The information is then handed over to the state auditors when they come so that they have resources to be able to verify what we looked at and what the results were.
Could you explain just briefly the concept of a tag? Is it just a sticker type of tag?
Yeah, they identify. They have separate numbers. They're numbered. And it says property of Story County. It's a blue tag that gets.
Back of that laptop. She's sitting in front of Wayne.
Okay. And then, as you indicated, we had a few that were there was no verification if they were either sold, traded, or junked. So we are
tag fell off.
Right. So we're hoping to implement a training or a process by which that number could shrink, hopefully, to be non-existent so that we have some accounting of all those items.
Correct. Correct.
9% fairly common?
Last time we did it in FY10, FY11's report was 5%. So it's a little higher than last time, but
any trend at all?
I didn't see any trend at all from what the situation was. You know, in all fairness, there are some departments that have long lists of inventory, and when we send it out in February or March, they do a overview of cursory. They don't really identify every item on their list necessarily, so that, you know, because that would take care of a lot of our missing items. If they would just say, you know, can't find a tag but it's still here, then we would, that's a verifiable item, especially if there's serial numbers and those types of things that we can actually match up. Some of the items, one of the items that I showed is not verified in this report, happened to be one of the stone picnic tables out at the horizontal stone picnic tables out in the area at the courthouse, out on South B. The tag simply had fallen off, but the table was there, but there's no other identifying marks on it, so it's hard to, you know, say, well, this is or isn't the item because it doesn't have a tag on it because it fell off, but it's obviously there. I'm looking at it.
So hopefully then as you work with department heads and those who are responsible for this, that if there's any issues or questions, please let us know, and we can point out again the importance of this, because again, with the auditing process and the verification, this is needed. So
I have had comments from departments that think that $500 is too low, that we should consider increasing that, and that's the board's decision, obviously, and that's something you can think about. I stand by the 500 personally. I think that is...
Well, 500 is quite valuable as far as I'm concerned to me. So
I don't like that there's 13 items. I mean, even if one of them is a picnic table, I don't like that there's 13 items that we can't figure out what happened to. I like the idea of more training, and I'm going to come over and get a list from you of what items we're missing.
Okay.
That's fine. I'm interested in it.
Thank you.
Good. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. So we need just action to acknowledge. No, this is no action here. This is just acknowledge receipt. It's a report. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Moving on to consideration of Resolution 1302, the Athens County Development Plan Amendment. From Planning and Development, Charlie Giselle. Welcome, Charlie.
Good morning.
Hey, man.
Good
morning. How you doing?
Good. How you guys doing?
Good.
As you had mentioned, this is consideration of Resolution 1302. It's the Athens County Development Plan Amendment request. The applicant is Hunziker Land Development Company, and the property owner is the Athens Revocable Trust. Looking at the general area, the property location, it's Section 29 of Franklin Township. It's on the west side of G.W. Carver and east of the Squaw Creek. It starts approximately a fourth of a mile south of Cameron School Road and continues about three-quarters of a mile south from there. The size of the area is about 140 acres. The zoning in place on the property is A1. Property is currently being used as a crop production ground, and it is immediately adjacent to the city of Ames. Map here is the surrounding property owner map that we did send to property owners within a quarter mile of this area. It gives an idea of where that is. It's the area kind of in the yellow hash there, again, just west of G.W. Carver. The current designation on the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, which is a component of the Story County Development Plan, it designates this property as priority transitional residential and natural areas, and the proposed land use framework map designation would be urban residential. Essentially, this is being proposed by the applicant in order to have the land annexed inside of the city of Ames, so the development that's being proposed can take full advantage of municipal services. We did note that this proposed use would fit into its current designation, the rural and urban service areas, as that priority transitional residential land use designation does, again, allow for residential development. However, if it were left in its current designation, it would not allow for the land to be annexed, and development would have to be on your traditional rural services, such as septic, rural water, and rural EMS. We did note that the Ames Urban Fringe Plan is oriented towards the growth of the city of Ames, and the plan is a shared land use plan cooperatively developed by Boone County, Story County, the city of Ames, and the city of Gilbert, and each of them have some level of interest in how the land in the fringe area develops. Story County's first and foremost land use goal is the preservation of valuable farm ground while allowing enough land for growth in and around the edges of the current municipal boundaries. And again, this property is on the edge of the city of Ames. While this land is currently being used as agricultural, again, the fringe plan does designate this area for non-agricultural development. And again, as we mentioned, the main issue being reviewed here is should this development be allowed to be annexed within the city of Ames. This request in particular is proposing changing the natural areas located on the property to the urban service areas. I know this was a question before the meeting here from one of the members of the public, but the natural areas under this designation are mainly the floodplain of Squaw Creek. I'll show you a map here in a little bit that'll show you where that's at. It does also include some woodland with about a 7 to 8% slope.
Charlie, he referred to those as special use areas, I think?
They're considered natural areas, and I thinking that was what he was getting at, asking what those natural areas were and what they included. Again, I'll show you a map here in a little bit. It probably will explain it a little bit better than the verbiage I have on here. Nothing was submitted as to why that designation should be removed, although it wasn't included in the proposed change. So staff's opinion is that if this proposal is ultimately approved, that known natural areas should be protected and unchanged. This is also the Planning and Zoning Commission's recommendation, and to leave that unchanged, and at that meeting, the applicant really didn't raise any objections to that, and I'm assuming he'll probably speak at this meeting too to reiterate that. So this map right here, if you look at it, shows the amendment area outlined there in orange. That kind of yellowish-greenish area to the north is actually the current priority transitional residential area, and the green area to the south is all the natural area. Now, if you look at that, look at where the floodplain for Squaw Creek is located on that property. You can kind of see how it lines itself up with those wooded areas there. Just to the would be the east side of that floodplain right there. And if you look at the slopes, this is actually a topography map from the LIDAR data, kind of shows you where those sharp slopes are in that wooded area going down into the floodplain. And again, if you put that natural area back over that area, you kind of see how it lines up with that, and those essentially are where your natural areas are coming from. Any questions on that before I go forward? Okay. Looking back at the adoption of the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, at the time of its implementation, it did place enough land in the urban service areas. Those urban service areas, again, are the areas which the city forecasts growth expectation up until 2030 for immediate annexation, not immediate annexation, but the ability to be annexed without an amendment. That urban service areas, they were meant to be areas of the plan that on top of providing enough land for future growth were the most cost-effective to grow into for the city. To fully understand if this area would be cost-effective area to grow into, again, the proposed area is what I'm talking about. The City of Ames is currently looking at a few studies. One, the existing sanitary sewer line does appear to be sufficient to serve the area for which it is designed, which is most of the Northridge Heights located directly east of the site. They did note at some point during the construction of Northridge Heights, the developer did place the sanitary sewer extension under G.W. Carver with the hopes that it could be used to serve the area west of G.W. Carver in the future. However, now there is a concern that that sanitary sewer system downstream from the Northridge Heights is reaching its capacity and that no additional areas beyond the original design area should be served. Because of this, at the developer's request, the city did install flow meters to measure how much of the system is being used in order to better collaborate the model. That final report will determine whether the model predicts that there is an excess capacity, or if not, what changes to the system could be made to increase capacity to serve the proposed area. The City of Ames is also concerned with emergency response time out in this area. City staff did present a report to the City Council about possible changes to emergency response criteria. From the indication that we've been given by the City of Ames, that rather than a policy, the City Council will likely look to establish performance measures based on the frequency of calls. And that approach may require the City Council to determine whether uses that typically have high volumes of calls should be placed along the perimeter of the city. Again, those studies are ongoing and will undoubtedly be finalized when the city reviews this particular application, which I believe is happening as soon as sometime in September or October.
Charlie, may I ask a question? Yes, and perhaps a city planner might be able to comment on this. Taking the fire protection area just as one entity, are you aware where plans have been denied simply because the response time or they didn't feel that they could adequately provide that? And then I come to the second part of the question is, what happens to the concept of buyers beware, that if you want to move forward knowing full well that you may have some limitations toward fire safety, what is the ultimate responsibility of the homeowner who buys in that area, and what type of disclosure would be necessary if a plan was approved?
Now, I'll definitely look to Charlie here from the City of Ames to answer that first question.
The first part of it, the City of Ames does have our current fire response policy that 85% of the area of the community must be reachable by a fire truck within 5 minutes. And that's based on a computer model identifying essentially zones in the community and how fast can a projection of a fire truck get from one of the three fire stations to that area. Recently, when we annexed the Rose Prairie subdivision in the North Growth area, that area was outside of our five-minute response time, and it also brought the overall total of the area of the city. We don't meet that 85% with the annexation of Rose Prairie. So as part of the approval of that, there was a development agreement that said those homes need to have a fire sprinkler system within the homes. There's some resistance on other properties up in that area that look to be annexed, so that's kind of driving the whole issue of what is the appropriate fire response rate for the city.
Thank you.
To answer both your questions on that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right.
Going a little bit further then, since the adoption of the Ames Urban Fringe Plan in 2005, there has been one similar amendment application to this one, and as Charlie had mentioned, it goes back to the Rose Prairie application that we were looking at 3 or 4 years ago now. But in that particular request, the Board of Supervisors ultimately waived their review of the map change, however, did place a time frame on which action needed to occur before the Board could potentially revisit the request. And again, if you're looking at this from, you know, this is ultimately going to allow the land to be annexed, the reason we put that time frame on there, or reason I think the Board put the time frame on there, was that if annexation didn't take place, you know, for 3 or 4 years, the county is going to have one land use designation on it, the city is going to have another, and at some point we need to have that agreement on the plan, otherwise it really isn't that effective. So if that makes sense, the Board of Supervisors again agreed that allowing the area to be annexed was probably a policy decision that was best done by the City of Ames, and that if Ames was comfortable in allowing growth into that area, the county would have no objection. And again, we noted that the same decision could be made in this request, and that is actually ultimately what the Planning and Zoning Commission is recommending to you. Looking at that a little bit further, though, in the previous request, the City of Ames ultimately approved the change of nearly 400 acres of that priority transitional residential, and I would call that kind of the second tier of growth on the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, into that first tier, the urban residential, and subsequently has annexed nearly 200 acres of that area, which is ultimately that Rose Prairie area. That area, as well as the subject area that we're looking at today, is considered to be in the North Growth area of the City of Ames. And the Ames Urban Fringe Plan did not designate the North Growth area as high priority growth area. And I was talking to Charlie just before the meeting, and that more or less means the high priority growth areas are more or less the areas where there is incentives to grow into from the City of Ames. This priority transitional residential area doesn't have those incentives. This area included about 650 acres of that priority transitional residential land. Again, I mentioned that already. I won't go over that. I'm sorry. In staff's opinion, if this particular request brings in the greater question of should the North Growth Area, particularly those areas that were designated as priority transitional residential, be placed in the urban services area, and if so, have growth projections increased enough to warrant this additional amount of land into the urban service areas? Or do we need to look at shifting some lands that are currently in the urban service areas into that urban, rural urban transition area? Main reason that we brought that up as staff was because you'll remember with the 2080 agreement, in those urban service areas, the county board of supervisors, we've waived our review of subdivisions in those areas. So again, putting more land into those urban service areas essentially taking away your subdivision review in more and more land. And again, are we warranting more land to be readily annexed into the city of Ames? Again, it might be just something that as staff we might need to start looking at and seeing if there's areas where we can switch some land out and put it back into more of the rural areas. So this map here is the allowable growth areas. This is actually a City of Ames map. You can see that north area up there, the most north area, and then those northwest 1 and 2 and the southwest 1 and 2, which currently are the urban service areas on the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. This map right here shows you, if I can get my laser pointer actually here, I can probably show you a little bit better. It works. This area right here is the Rose Prairie area, Grand Avenue right there. And this area right here is the area that we're looking at today. This, again, this kind of darkish green area here, those are all the priority transitional residential areas on the plan. These areas right here have actually already been converted over to urban service area. So pretty much we have this area right over here that's left into that priority transitional residential area. And with the requests that we're looking at today, you're looking at taking that amount of land off of that, just leaving this area right in here. So again, we think it brings up the greater question is, do we need to start looking at those growth priority areas on the fringe plan? As I had mentioned a few times here, the Planning and Zoning Commission did review this on earlier this month. I believe it was July 1st or July 2nd. They did recommend to the Board of Supervisors waiving the review of the Athens County Development Plan Amendment with a condition that the Board of Supervisors state that annexation shall take place within 1 year or the review process would need to start over, and directed us to place this on your agenda this morning. With that, we have outlined five conditions in the staff report, and they're on the screen here above. And if there's any additional questions from the Board, I'd be happy to entertain them at this time.
I call your attention to the letter we received from the Mayor of Gilbert. There been some discussions regarding some of the issues that they just had questions about. They didn't appear to be actually opposing it, but I wasn't clear that in the letter that they just felt that there were some questions before, you know, they basically acknowledged consent to move forward.
Yeah, and looking at this, and I had to get the two of them straight because I wasn't sure because there's another one coming up here on your agenda, but the eighth and one, from what I'm able to read in the letter here, states that the council had a number of questions that were not able to be addressed at that July 9th meeting, and they tabled that pending further review by the staff. I have not received any indication if that's gone forward yet or not. My assumption would be it hasn't, if we haven't, and I don't know if Charlie can speak to that either.
I think my impression of that, Charlie, was that Gilbert was going to table it until they figured out what we and the City of Ames were going to do.
And that definitely could potentially be it. So I know on the next one, the Oaks one, they more or less approved it with any conditions that we would place on it. But, you know, with this 8th and 1, like we had mentioned in the staff report, you know, there's a lot of studies and stuff that the City of Ames are doing that, you know, right now it's probably a little bit hard for anybody to make a educated decision on the amendment request. And, again, that's ultimately where the waiving of the recommended waiving of this is actually coming from.
So. Yeah, I mean, we're going to talk about the Oaks here in a few minutes. I view that one as much more in our wheelhouse to deal with than this one. Can you go back to one of the color-coded maps for me? As I look at this, you just passed one. Yeah, that's
this
good.
One.
Right there. Yeah, that's good. And just help me if I'm wrong here, Charlie. I am much more interested in what is kind of the natural green, not the yellowy green. What's going to happen in that area, which is basically floodplain and it's row crop right now and everything else. But I view this as if it's Ames' intention to annex this ground, then I think it's completely appropriate for us to kind of waive our authority. But I would like some understanding of, and maybe this is for Chuck, some understanding of what the intention is to go on kind of down in that floodplain. Where are we talking about development here?
And I definitely think Chuck will cover that, but in every indication that we've been given that really there isn't going to be any development down underneath those sloped right. areas right there. Really the only reason this is being brought in is just because the way the land is set up, the way the parcels are set up, it actually brings this area in, and there's really no way around that unless you actually would do a subdivision first, which probably a little bit more problematic to the process. So, yeah, every indication we've been given, there won't be much that goes down on there. The city of Ames has floodplain regulations just as the county does. So, you know, if it was ultimately annexed and they wanted to develop down there, obviously it would be under the city of Ames' discretion, but there would still be regulations that would have to be followed.
I did get one comment this morning. I had a phone call from an individual by the name of Greg Arts. And he lives on Deer Run Lane, which I think is probably west of that area.
Yeah.
And he just had some concerns. He's not opposed to the concept of the senior campus. His concern is if the senior campus doesn't take up the entire 140-acre parcel, then what becomes of the rest of it? And he was afraid that whether it be apartment buildings or whatever else would come up around that the development area if it didn't include the whole thing. And he was unable to come today.
And again, I would definitely invite Chuck up here and have him discuss what the plans are for the area because he definitely has more knowledge than I do about it. So,
well, I'd like to hear whatever comment he can make regarding that since at least this was a question that was proposed to one of us. So if Chuck, if you would mind, yes, please.
Okay.
That's a request, a polite request, not a demand request.
Good morning, Chuck Michael Black, 105 South 16th Street. You'll have to pardon my voice a little bit this morning. Charlie, if you can go to the LIDAR map that you had up there, I think that represents both the best of what our actual intentions are. The reason that, and we've been asked this a lot, why with the 140 acres, the reason is this land that's down in this area, we have no intentions for any structures, no development, with the possible exception of some walking trails, which are not structures, or potentially a small storm shelter or something, two posts and a roof, 10 by 10, something. If somebody got caught down there and it started raining, but certainly no structures, no development. And the reason that that I want Charlie to bring up this map is that green area that's there, and the steroids I'm on are making me awfully shaky today. But that indicates that the lighter line is kind of the where the land falls off, and when it falls off dramatically. So I guess our intention is to basically use the tree line and develop east of the tree line, with the exception of there's a little bit, and when I say a little bit, maybe a half an acre or so or less, we haven't mapped it out yet, of what Jim Athan, that's lived there for quite some time, said that there's some volunteer trees that have just kind of encroached there over time, that a few of those may be removed, but certainly not to get into where the slopes are, and absolutely nothing down in here. The reason that that ground is a part of this request is twofold. One, we can't just cut it off here and then have a piece of land down there that has no access on a public right-of-way and just say, well, we want to buy this that we can use, and we'll leave this down here. Well, the property owner doesn't want that as well. So our intention is to have it as an amenity, as a walking trail down there potentially, and then also to meet the requirement of not having a landlocked piece of land that nothing can be done with. As far as the zoning and what's planned up here, we have a senior living housing project that's been contemplated down here. Now, that may have to shift to a different area because this recent information found out that there's a high-pressure gas main that runs right almost directly through the middle of the property, and they are unwilling to move it. The company that owns it, and so we may have to try to find a different place within the same confines of that area that they would go, and we haven't done that yet. But the reason that comes up with the talk about what's the zoning and stuff going to be for their use, they're not allowed in a low-density setting. So they have both independent living, assisted living, and full skilled care. And by the AIM zoning code, that will not go in the RL designation. So certainly there will be no RH, no high density zoning anywhere in the development, and certainly there will be no commercial development requested or proposed in the area. Other than that, until we get the land use stuff done, we haven't done any real layouts. We just generally don't get that far in the process of laying the entire subdivision out. But we're confident that things will look a lot as they do in our development across the way. We've had some, one of the products that we're looking at is this area is a townhouse product that are more duplexes. We're also looking at a concept of maybe that same type of structure is in there, only in detached units to where people have smaller footprints that their house is on, but they share some common areas. We've looked at some of the conservation subdivision elements over there that we hope to incorporate into that, which again means smaller footprints for the lots and shared common spaces. But other than that, we just haven't got... until we get through some of these land use changes, amendments, then there really isn't any sense for us to go forward and do a full-scale layout.
Chuck, when does this go to the City of Ames?
Charlie's going to have to... I mean, they tabled... It was supposed to be July 16th, and it was tabled... I don't know. So I'll let Charlie address what he thinks that's going to be.
We've had an open house and a workshop in accordance with our OUPP schedule for major amendments. We postponed taking this to, as Chuck said, the Planning Commission on July 16th. We thought there may be a need for a second workshop. In any case, we're evaluating this information that we've got, and we're still doing a little bit of research on some of the concerns that were raised.
We'll try to summarize what he's saying. Because of the audio portion, we can't really pick up your comment, so we would need to either try to...
The answer to the question, when's it going forward? I hope to have an answer when my department meets on Monday, that we'll have a schedule laid out to bring this back to the PNZ of Ames and the City Council. At this point, the preliminary schedule looked like it was going to get in front of the City Council for a decision in... September, we may have lost a couple of weeks at least on that.
Okay. Anything else, Rick, on that regard? Okay. Thank you. So, Charlie, basically, at this point, as we look at the alternatives and the information that we have before us, it appears to just involve... whether or not Story County will move forward with waiving its authority, and then this would become under the auspices of the City of Ames working with developers as they move forward. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. And again, with the condition that, and this is recommended from the Planning and Zoning Commission, but if within 1 year it hasn't been annexed, then we take a look at it and see if we need to make the map change to keep it in accord with what the city has.
I'd move approval of resolution 1302 as written.
Oh, and so is that, excuse
me, option one.
That's option one with conditions as outlined. Okay.
I'll second that.
Okay, it's been moved and second the approval of resolution of the adoption of resolution number 1302 accepting the recommendation of Planning and Zoning Commission and waiving the review of the Athens County Development Plan as put forth in case 112 with conditions as outlined. Is there further discussion? Hearing none, I will... let's see, and this one can just didn't require a roll call, so it's a resolution, isn't it?
Resolution.
It's a resolution. It'll be a roll call. Sanders?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Clinton? Aye. Resolution 1302 is adopted, and thank you, Charlie, your staff, and Chuck for your involvement, as well as Charlie.
Just before we move on, something Charlie brought up in there, talking about how, okay, we're moving into areas that we weren't necessarily expecting to move into when we originally put together the urban fringe plan. Charlie, my view on that is I think that was intended to be a living, breathing document. I mean, I felt here over the last couple of months maybe it was a living, breathing document that was on life support because things have not gone exactly like I envisioned them going when I voted to support it. But I think it's a continuing conversation that we ought to have. If Ames priorities are shifting through the wants, needs of the community, then we should recognize that as part of our plan. So I think it's an appropriate conversation for us to have.
Great. Thank you. Thanks for calling that attention. Okay. Anything else, Charlie? Okay.
Nope, I'll just wait for the next one.
Okay. All right. It has been brought to my attention by our clerk that Marcy, is it Chaucer, has requested to comment regarding this. So thank you, Shelley. We certainly want to give you an opportunity to apologize for the oversight.
Good morning. My name is Marcy Chaucer. I'm on Weston Drive. At the Planning Commission, I came and they were saying going in and out of Weston. And I figured if it's a senior facility, he was saying we would put a access road down to the facility. That's when it was in the lower part. I don't know if they're going to change it now. But I'd like to see, mostly because ambulances and things that will be going to take the people, as to have them go back up and come out Weston. Maybe to get an on-ramp, a road going from the facility onto George Washington Carver, like by Harrison. There is like a driveway there now, sort of. But I just thought, I'm just thinking more for the, if it's a senior center, facility, ambulances are different, maybe just once or twice a month, but as to have them pick the people up and curve and go back up and then curve around to get on George Washington Carver from Weston, maybe to propose a little bit of a on-ramp from that access road going towards like Mary Greeley Hospital where they would be going. So I didn't know if that would be in the, as to have all the access for that one facility for the workers, for the truck drivers, for everybody. If they're going to go north, they'll have to come out on Weston. But if they were going to go south, the people, let them get another road, another exit.
Okay, so the process for consideration of any changes of the layout would come at a later time working through the plan, depending upon, the action that are taken basically here, but I think you raised a very good point, and it might be something whether they thought about or not thought about would be worthy of taking in consideration to see the feasibility of that or if there are some other restrictions that would make that not a workable solution.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I thought. If we just bring it up, maybe in their minds they'll be realizing, gee, one exit in and out is maybe not enough.
Great. Thank you. Okay. Are there any other comments regarding this development? I certainly just had the two that had spoken earlier, and in the light of giving everyone an opportunity. Okay. So with that, then we have that motion before us and a second, I believe. So all those in favor, it was a roll call. I think it's Sanders.
Aye again.
To Clinton, aye. It is adopted. And we look forward to seeing what happens with the future development. Great. And thank you, and I apologize for not picking up on that. Good. Okay, then moving on to item 5, which is the consideration of resolution 1303, the Oaks Development Plan Amendment.
Again, as you mentioned, this is the Oaks Development Plan Amendment Request, Resolution 1303. Applicant again on this one is Hunziker Land Development Company, property owner being the Oaks Development Group. It's in Section 22 of Franklin Township at the southwest corner of U.S. Highway 69 and West 190th Street, parcel a tad over 40 acres. The zoning on this parcel is A1 agricultural, and there is a little piece of I-2 heavy industrial. Real quick history on that one, actually, that I-2 heavy industrial is left over from when Ada Hidden Lake was actually a rock quarry. That's the only piece that was not annexed inside of the city of Ames upon the change. So, again, we just have had that zoning go through over time, and it's still there. So it's classified, currently this property is classified as a commercial use as it contains a golf course, and it is within 2 miles of both Ames and the city of Gilbert. Map here shows the area of land that we're looking at, again in the yellow hash, right in this area right here, and you've got Ada Hidden Lake, Riverside Road down here. Looking at this one, the current map designation does designate this property as parks and recreational areas. That's a subcategory of the rural services area. Also contains some environmentally sensitive areas and is also part of the gateway protection area and the watershed protection area. I'll go over those here in a little bit. The proposed land use framework designation is to rural residential, which is, again, this one is also part of that rural services area. These are the areas in the 2080 agreement where the city has waived their review authority. So we're looking at almost changing subcategories, but the overall category is still going to be that rural services area, if that makes sense. On this one, which is ultimately being reviewed here, is if this area should be opened up for residential development or if it should be left in a park and recreational use. The rural services and ag conservation areas do not allow, nor does it plan for annexation inside any of the cities at any time during the framework of the plan, and development would be on traditional rural services, again, the rural water, the septic, and the rural EMS. The current land use designation was placed on this land with the implementation of the fringe plan, more or less to mirror the current land use that was in place, which was the golf course at that time, still is. There is only one zoning district other than the A1 agricultural that would conform to the proposed land use designation. And again, that proposed land use designation is the residential development, and that's the AR agricultural residential zoning district. That zoning district, in summary, allows for minimum lot sizes of 1 acre. The request being proposed would include changing the natural areas on the south side of the property to the rural services and ag conservation areas. That natural area is on approximately south 300 feet of the property and is meant to serve as a buffer between Ada Hayden Park and the subject property. The request also includes land designated in the Gateway Protection Area and the Watershed Protection Area. The Gateway Protection Area is designated around the larger transportation corridors at the entrances of the City of Ames. The Watershed Protection Area applies to the watershed area of Ada Hidden Lake. With this area's adjacency to Ada Hidden Park, a great deal of emphasis should be placed on the protection of the park from surface and groundwater pollution and contamination, as well as other nuisances which could take away from the park's value. Furthermore, staff did note that there is a stream that runs through this property in its northeast corner. This particular stream empties into the Skunk River southeast of this property, approximately 1 mile downstream. I was hoping to have a picture up here soon, but we'll get there. That stream is surrounded by floodplain. It's a little more than 2 acres worth of floodplain on the property. The Ames Urban Fringe Plan did attempt to protect floodplain areas from development by using a land use designation of its actual natural areas, not environmentally sensitive areas. As the entire property was placed in the Parks and Recreation Area, it was not figured that the floodplain area around the stream would be open to development. Again, that was when the plan was implemented. And staff did note to continue to protect the stream and the subsequent floodplain, it may be necessary to place the land use designation of natural areas, replace the environmental sensitive areas there with natural areas. This map here will show you pretty much everything we were talking about. This dark green area is the park and rec area currently in place on the property. The light green is that natural area we told you about that's meant to buffer the park. This kind of dashed line right there, that's actually the Ada Hayden watershed protection area. And then you can kind of see this circle that goes around right here. That's the gateway protection area on the plan. Any questions on any of that before we go forward? Good. We got elevation map right here. You can kind of see how pretty much everything from this point on would flow down into the park here area, or park area. Everything from here kind of flows into that stream that pretty much cuts through the property right there. And I believe this map here shows where that stream area is and where that floodplain is located on the property. With that, the Planning and Zoning Commission did recommend approval of this plan, of this request, with the condition being such that that floodplain area is designated as natural areas to the Board of Supervisors and directed us to place this item on your agenda this morning. We did want to note that last Tuesday, July 24th, the Ames City Council did adopt a resolution approving this request. That resolution states that the City Council of Ames, that the amendment to the land use designation of the Oaks Golf Course from Parks and Recreation Area to Rural Residential, it did ask for the designation of the floodplain in the northeast corner as natural areas, and it did subject a limitation of subdividing this area into no more than 5 lots. The request that we've seen, and I know that the board did see this earlier this year, I believe, just kind of a preliminary sketch of what the developer's planning on doing, but right now it does include 4 new development lots and then a lot where that current clubhouse is on the golf course. Again, since the City of Ames, if this does go forward, they don't have control on the subdivision aspect of it because they've waived their review in these areas. So I think their intention of putting this language on the 5 lots is their attempt to keep that to 5 lots to protect Ada Hayden. The way the 2080 agreement is written, that we would like all entities to adopt pretty much similar language, so we're remaining consistent. The resolution that we drafted up for this meeting didn't include that language. However, I would propose or I would suggest that the board put some language in there, more or less. From what I have here, this would just be some kind of added paragraphs into that resolution. The first one, underlined and bolded there, just kind of discusses how the City of Gilbert and the City of Ames have taken action to approve it. And this last one right here would be the board agreeing to take action to limit the subdivision of this area to no more than 5 development lots with a conditional rezoning agreement if and when the rezoning is approved. So
can we consider that alternative number 5 that we don't have? We've got 4 alternatives here in front of us. And so I'm viewing
what?
With conditions. Okay, so 1 is approving it with conditions, yeah. But as laid out.
It would be somewhat kind of, it would be kind of a modified alternative 2. Except you wouldn't be adopting the full recommendation of the Planning and Zoning Commission. You're almost just adding a condition onto the resolution.
Yeah.
So acknowledging the recommendation of the Planning and Zoning Commission, but adding further conditions on to the recommendation.
Charlie, one of the questions that came up is if this is allowed to go forth and you begin to have some development, say in this case the 5 lots is the max that is being proposed. What precludes that? So does that mean that the golf course as it is now currently does no longer exist? And so what happens to the rest of the land as far as future development?
So you're asking more or less what happens to the golf course if right. this is approved right now. Okay. Well, until there is any change in zoning and stuff like that, it would be able, you know, to happen until the land is developed. Golf courses, the way we have them set up right now, are typically approved through a conditional use permit. Conditional use permits are approved by the Board of Adjustment, not the Board of Supervisors. This one in particular kind of falls under that legally established non-conforming use category since the golf course has been there. Since any record that we have, it's been there for a long time. Any change to that might require a conditional use permit, but you know, once the zoning's adopted, I think at that time, once we work out the zoning, you know, maybe we can come to some sort of agreement with the developer to because technically that golf course I don't think would be conforming once we change the zoning. So we could maybe come to some agreement with them in that conditional rezoning agreement to figure all that stuff out. But in all reality, I don't know how big of a deal it is either, because obviously eventually that's going to end once the lots start developing.
Right. But Wayne, to your question about what happens to the rest of the land, there is no other land if we approve this, because you got those five lots, but really only four of them buildable, because one of them is where the clubhouse currently sits. Mm-hmm. It's down in that what I consider a floodplain. I mean, how often does that clubhouse get flooded? You get water in there.
Nice. Probably twice.
Yeah. So you're talking about four buildable lots on 40 acres of ground, but basically roughly 10 acres per building lot. So it's not like there's going to be extra land sitting there. You're going to have one house every 10 acres.
The reason for the question more or less was because the question was proposed to me and I didn't have an answer. I wanted to be able to, you know, communicate back. This is what I found out, basically, in regard to that. The other question, we talk about the term environmental sensitive or natural area, and you have identified that natural area. As you become more forward thinking, are we to look at in the layout of this development, using this as a case really to enhance the natural protection of the water source, whether it's bioswale, some type of, there are a lot of innovative things that are happening nowadays that I think this could be a very environmentally sensitive area that could be kind of a showcase for what can happen in developing in an area where recreation is certainly one of the real values for this particular area. And so I don't know whether that comes in through the county at some point, since the city basically would be waiving their authority. But I would just caution us to make sure that we are doing everything that we possibly can to assure that the Ada Hayden Lake and the watershed is going to be protected.
Yeah, and that watershed protection area in the Ames Urban Fringe Plan actually has some language in there that kind of speaks to exactly what you were saying. I think once we get to the rezoning stage of this, that we'll probably look at that a little bit more intensely and try to figure out some stuff, and maybe again with some conditional rezoning agreements that we have, put some language in there. But obviously, as the board knows, if this goes forward today, this is kind of step one of almost a three-step process. You'll be reviewing the rezoning up to three times, and then you'll be reviewing the subdivision plat as well. So there's definitely time to look into some of those things and from staff make some recommendations to the board and the Planning and Zoning Commission.
You're going to take me back to the proposed language you had in there? Yeah, yep. Right there. And why not? Is there anybody who wants to speak to this before we go further?
I didn't have... No, I don't have any here. No. Okay, great. Chuck, we'll give you an opportunity.
On a couple of those points, I think, and again, we'll deal with that, I think, at the zoning and platting level, but the discussion's been, well, what keeps someone from buying 10 acres and then splitting it four or five times? And we've... agreed to by deed restriction, I think, is the most the way to deal with that. Our plans certainly are, for our perspective, not to do that, and are willing to do it by deed restriction so that the people that, because obviously once I sell them, I can't control what requests someone else might make, but if that deed restriction is in place, to me, the things that we're doing for the perpetual safety of the land is, when you think about it, There, we have 23 acres of land of the 40 acres that's owned there that's in the Ada Hayden watershed. That's about 1% of the watershed. It's currently 99% in a vegetative state, and post-development, it'll be 99% developed in a vegetative state. We've also agreed to where now we've been doing it voluntarily, restricting the use of phosphorus by the chemicals that I buy to operate the golf course. We're willing to also make that as part of the restrictive covenants that the people that live there need to use chemicals that are friendly to. But in addition to that, we use a number of chemicals on the golf course that will go away we do things differently for fungicides, pesticides that one certainly won't do in a residential setting. So the use of chemicals will greatly, I believe, enhance, the future protection of the watershed. Also, we currently mow, again, 99% of that grass. We haven't much this year because it's been pretty dry, but the likelihood that the residents will mow 10 acres with the same frequency that we do is not very likely. And I think there will be, whether it's done with grasses, whether it's done with native plants to Iowa, I think that there will be much less groomed area in the future than there is certainly today. And again, with the line that we're talking about, the watershed protection area running through there, again, less the two of the residences that will be built there will not even be in the Ada Hayden watershed. So, I guess I think we've come up with in the broad strokes version of what we've gotten five of the six bodies to agree to. I think we kind of have a consensus of what's the best thing to do. The floodplain, the areas up in the northeast corner. Again, my intention was that we have a residence that's there and would like to continue to use it. It's an affordable place for someone to live. I just don't want to lose the use of that. But again, going forward, it'll be restricted to by the floodplain regulations so that it really can't. If something happens and it's destroyed, then nothing will be built in there. And I understand that, and we're good with that. It just seems a waste to take an affordable living place out of the use just because it's in the floodplain. It's operated there. In 2010 was the only time we've had substantial water in there. Otherwise, we had this much that seeped up into. But otherwise, so we'd like to continue that use. There'll be four other building lots out there. And again, for the overall stability of the area, I think, remembering back, and why we've asked to have the natural area removed on the south there is, I think when that was, I've owned that for, this is my 13th year now, and when we were going back through the land use conversations, my intention always had been to develop that land to the north. And I think if it were to be a more traditional land development where there could be, approximately 100 houses in that dark green area, then it would make a lot more sense to have that natural area to the south as a buffer. But when you look at, there's from the furthest point of where there could be any development, closest to the pond is still over 2 football fields away. So this is not a traditional development like you have when they talk about the first flush after a heavy rain when stuff's all collected in the pipes and all the impervious areas come together. We have no impervious areas, so everything generally soaks right into the ground. So
comparison, Chuck, so 600 feet is the closest that any development could occur to Ada Hayden right now. If we were to go to the south side of
75 feet.
75 feet for those houses? Okay.
Yeah. So we feel like we've got, and in Ames Conservation, I haven't looked through Story Counties, but in Ames Conservation Subdivision regulations, like what's being proposed for Rose Prairie, it's either 75 feet or 100 feet of buffer from a waterway. And so here we're 600 feet as a minimum. So we feel like we're protecting that. This for the long term. This stabilizes it. We'll put the things in place when we get down to platting and zoning to restrict further development. and we're excited, and we'd urge whatever you pass to be, I don't know what these amendments that you make, hopefully won't cause it to have to go back and everybody else to review it again, I guess is my only caution about the language that Charlie's proposing. The goal was for it so that everybody kind of was approving the same thing, and I hope that those changes don't require it to start the process over again, because we've been a while getting here.
And, Charlie, that's what you're talking about with adding the five-lot provision, because that makes it line up with the city of A.
Exactly. Yeah, and
without that language, it might create a problem to bring us all into cooperation on that. So.
Right, yeah.
And I don't, you know, I think if you direct us to change the language, what we'll do is we'll change the resolution, get it back up to Shelley yet today, so we can just discard the resolution that we have right now, but... We'll have the updated one.
No, it was my hope that we would be able to be in similar compliance with Ames as far as the five lot designation, and I thought it would be important that that be included in any action that we would take at this point. Right.
Yeah, and so I would just state now, it is my intention as I make this motion that what we pass here today is consistent with what Gilbert and Ames has already passed so that we can get to the next step of the process. So just making that clear. With that, I move adoption of the forthcoming resolution accepting the recommendation of our Planning and Zoning Commission and approving the Oaks Development Plan Amendment with conditions as set forth by our Planning and Zoning, but I want to add the condition of the five lots so that it conforms with what Ames has already done.
And I'll second that.
There's support. Okay. It's been moved and second to move the resolution for adoption of the resolution 1303 accepting the recommendation as put forth by Planning and Zoning Commission and with conditions as outlined and with the added five lots notation. Is there further discussion?
The only thing I'll add is that I had a conversation with Irv Kloss one day last week, and he said if you think about it long enough and hard enough, he said you'd probably come to the conclusion that this area of land would be better served under the proposed development than it is right now as a goal.
This is best case scenario. I mean, this is, you think about all the different things that could happen with that piece of ground. This is, as I view it, this is as good as it gets right here.
Okay, so if there are no further comments, then call the question. Sanders?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Clinton? Aye. Brett? Yes. I don't have any notification up here that anyone wanted to speak on this item. So, but I will hold any action yet and give you an opportunity, sir. Would you please come up and state your name? And you have a question regarding this proposal? Okay, please come up and state your name and where you reside, please. I realize several people came in late after we had got started, and our provision is always to sign in, and if you wish to speak, you fill out a form like this so that it gives us some guidance in terms of who wish to talk. There will always be exceptions, of course.
Can we put a map up there of the...
Charlie, are you still around?
My name is Dwayne Cowan, and I live at... 822 West 190th Street, adjacent to Alta Vista. I live on the west side of Alta Vista. Quite a few people in Alta Vista are concerned about is there a possibility of having horses or animals or anything on a 10-acre lot? Couldn't really find out what the zoning is going to be. We also had a number of other, I guess, what we thought would be ideal would be, and I tried to get some interest in this from Chuck and some other from the city, is that what we thought would be ideal would be to tie this into the Hayden Lake complex and create keep it as a golf course, move the clubhouse from the north side, which is really congested, and move it to the south side. I realize in order to do that, the county would have to buy it or the city would have to buy it. But make kind of a nice complex for the whole Hayden Lake area, which has been very popular. also take the clubhouse and tie it in with the parking lot, add on to the parking lot from Hayden Lake area, and make the clubhouse down there, change the numbers of the golf course around, and make kind of a really nice complex out of it, because everybody in Ames, Iowa, and the surrounding area is very happy with the Hayden Lake area. It's been very popular. A lot of people use it, and a lot of people are very proud of what was made out of an old gravel pit. There's a number of other issues that we were concerned about, and that was what would happen if we realized the intent of the developer now is to have nice-looking 10-acre lots. What if the next person bought it and decided that he would like to have some animals in there? Our property, if we were to advertise our property for sale, if we were to advertise it be adjacent to a golf course, is a plus. If we have it adjacent to a horse barn, that is a minus. It affects our property values. Right now in the area, in Alta Vista area, there are three houses for sale. One just sold on the number 9T, adjacent to the number 9T. Two other houses are up for sale. One just sold day before yesterday. We're concerned about our property values, how this is going to affect our property values. The other thing we're concerned about is the reason I wanted a map up there was to see what the entrance would be from the north. Is it going to be on the side of the hill? I saw a plat, but I couldn't really determine where on the hill to the north where the driveway would be. Is it going to create a blind spot to the west? People coming from the west, or is it going to be too close proximity to the drive? Also, we have a drainage problem in the ditch to the north. The reason being is that we never could get the golf course people to give a little bit of land along 190th Street so that they could dig the ditch and slope it back better, because the dirt keeps sliding down and plugs the ditch right there. It's very steep right there, and it keeps backing water up into the Alta Vista area, especially my lot and the other lot to the southeast corner of Alta Vista on 190th Street. I guess it's my main concern is what we're kind of letting a big opportunity go as far as being able to create something really neat in this whole area. And I realize it's owned by a private owner, but I can't seem to get the city of Ames, and I don't know if the county would be interested in purchasing the property so that we could keep it as a golf course.
If you could come up with a way to provide the funding for the county, I'm sure we'd be interested. But
I understand that it appears
that the concept is certainly admirable and would be, you know, given some added amenities. However, again, this may be something that the developers might, you know, want to take a look at. We don't know at this point in time, but the reality of it is I doubt if the county is probably going to be in the position to look at purchasing land to keep that as a golf course.
How did we get the money for the Hayden Lake area?
Well, that was quite an interesting process. We can kind of go through that, but if you understand that the county presented over $1 million in kind, they didn't put any dollars toward that project. Okay, so as the planning and the seeding and all of those types of things. So, but you raise a good point.
Okay. It just seems like such a great opportunity to let slip by.
Thank you. Okay. Did we vote on that
issue? We did.
Is there anyone else? I didn't mean to cut off anyone that wanted to raise their hand. Thank you. Okay. No. Yes, we did. I thought we did. It was Sanders and then Toot, and then yep. Okay, I'm going to ask for shortly a 2-minute recess right quick before we move to the next item? So. Okay. We will call the meeting back to order. Item number five on the agenda is a consideration of Resolution 1307 for our hog confinement operations. I want to preface my any comments to begin with is that for the members of the audience, you may recall that last month or so we had a proposal that came before the Board of Supervisors and the Conservation Board met and had a public hearing and adopted a resolution for location of the confined animal feeding operation near Hickory Grove Park, and that was passed by unanimous consent and brought, and it was discussed or at the board. No action was taken immediately, and we placed it on further agendas to perhaps bring it back for our consideration. When this was brought back to the board, we discussed whether or not the support for the conservation, as it was stated, would be the direction that we would want to go, or whether or not we would perhaps want to either offer our own proposal. And after some discussion, Supervisor Sanders was commissioned or volunteered to work on drafting some language that would be brought back for us to consider. And so where we are today is having that information presented to us, that draft of a resolution by the Board of Supervisors. We want to give Supervisor Sanders an opportunity, maybe just comment briefly a little bit here. We'd also like to open this up and allow any comments from the audience prior to us taking any final action on the resolution, and then I'll have just a couple other comments to make as well. I have basically three requests for comments. There may be others. I do know that we do have members of the Conservation Board. We have the president of the chair of the Conservation Board here present as well. And so they certainly, if they so desire, would have an opportunity to address the board as we proceed today. But with that, Supervisor Sanders, any opening comments before we hear from any of the public at this point?
Well, yeah, Wayne, I think you hit the nail on the head in terms of how we got here. I mean, I think all three of us really appreciated what the Conservation Board had put together in their resolution. But I know when we discussed it, for me personally, I wasn't – Conservation Board has their role and the Board of Supervisors has their role, and so I wasn't comfortable with just a blanket passing of the resolution that Conservation came up with. So went back and just really tried to research what our role is, what I heard our stated goals were, and I'll say one of the things that hopefully comes through in here is I haven't heard anybody speak, including our citizens who farm and may want to have an animal operation, who have talked about a desire to pollute waterways or to negatively impact our open spaces. And so I felt like by identifying that language and what was important to all of us that I heard, clearly defining what the board's role is in this, and then ultimately what our stance would be based on those factors, was something that I could be really comfortable with, and that's how this resolution was drafted.
For the benefit of the audience, did you have an opportunity to go online and actually see a copy of the resolution that is before us? Is it necessary that I read that for your benefit, for those of you that perhaps – raise your hand if you haven't had a chance to see the resolution, okay, or hear it. Okay. I will just go ahead and read the resolution for you, and then we will entertain any comments or thoughts. Story County, Iowa, resolution of the Board of Supervisors. Whereas on June 11th, 2012, the Story County Conservation Board passed SCCB Resolution 2012-02 regarding confined animal feeding operations. And whereas Iowa Code Section 459.304 states...
Whoa, whoa, that's not what the resolution...
Wrong one?
Yep.
Was that the first one?
That was the first one, and then it got massaged.
Oh,
away.
That's
yep.
Right. Thank you. What? Yeah, it was on my desk, so I thought I did. Okay, excuse me. Second paragraph. I'm going to start at the beginning.
Okay.
Whereas on June 11, 2012, the Story County Conservation Board passed SSB Resolution 2012-02 regarding confined animal feeding operations, including manure management plan, and whereas the Iowa Code Chapter 459 defines a county's role in the application procedure for confined animal feeding operations and manure management plans, and whereas Iowa Code 459 further defines the distance requirements from dwelling, public use areas, and wetlands, and other requirements for confined animal feeding operations and manure management plans, and whereas the Story County Board of Supervisors wish to protect and preserve our county parks and watersheds while recognizing the importance and value of agricultural activities, including the raising of livestock. Now, therefore, it is resolved by the Story County Board of Supervisors that any new application for a confined feeding operation, including a manure management plan, or any applications to expand or change an existing confined feeding operation and our manure management plan will be evaluated to determine that the application or plan meets the requirement of Iowa Code Chapter 459, as well as considering the potential negative impact to public use areas and watersheds. All applications or plans not meeting the statutory requirements, or in the opinion of the Board of Supervisors, applications or plans detrimental to public use areas and or watersheds will be opposed by this board. And so that is the gist of the proposal that is before us. And I think to reiterate, part of the concern obviously had to do with protection, the negative impact of the watershed areas, and I would also assume that we're talking about septics, water issues, and things of that nature that could be negatively impacted, even though they are not necessarily spelled out. But that's going to be part of the interpretation. So one of the questions that Supervisor Sanders, I would like for us to at least think about as we're going through this process. When I read a resolution and the process basically says we'll be opposed if we determine that these things could have a negative impact, do we want the word may rather than will, just as a point of discussion? Again, as we go through this, have we built in any type of mechanism to actually evaluate that? Are we going to rely on our environmental health department? What are the, I'm sure we need to talk about how the county will probably play a role in making sure that the resolutions or the request for the manure management plan does meet the requirement. And perhaps Margaret can share again for some of the audience a little bit what her office does when we first receive that,
sure.
And
yeah.
Et cetera.
I'll try to answer your questions in order, I guess going from the last up. this resolution does not endeavor to lay out the process that we're going to go through to determine whether something may be detrimental. It states that if the three of us or any member sitting up here in the future, well, I guess it doesn't bind them, but if they choose to keep a resolution like this in place, if we find that something is going to detrimentally impact our parks or public areas or waterways, then we will oppose it. The question would be to you, Wayne, if you find out that a plan is going to be detrimental to one of our public use areas, are you maybe going to oppose it, or are you going to oppose it? I know that for me, as I wrote this, I said, hey, if I find out that something is going to be detrimental, again, not laying out what our process is to get there, but if it is shown to me that it's going to be detrimental, then I'm going to oppose it, because I'm opposed to, you know, destroying our waterways or detrimentally impacting our public use areas or parks. But I just felt like this reaffirmed our commitment to the Iowa Code, which we all stood right here and swore to uphold. It reaffirmed our commitment to that, and it lays out for staff, these are the items we're going to need anytime we see one of those. We're going to ask the question now formally. In the past, I think it was, we just kind of went down the process. It didn't trigger the master matrix, so we didn't have a process to look at it. And if there was enough public outcry, then we would look at something. This one lays it out and says, hey, when we get one of these, we're going to take a look, and we're going to see if there's any concerns in these areas. I think conservation clearly now is absolutely committed to that process through this one. And so that's all it's trying to lay out, is where this board comes down on it and laying out a directive to staff that we need a little more information than we've been getting in the past on these ones that don't trigger the master matrix.
In response, the question will versus may, yep, was more or less to clearly affirm it would be our intent that if we determine that it could have a negative impact, that we will oppose.
Underline if we determine. I mean, the conversation there, Wayne, is do we determine whether it has a negative impact or not? If we determine that it does,
right,
then we're opposing.
Right. Exactly.
Is what this lays out.
That was my question. Okay. We have, many of you have heard that. Some of you have heard it maybe for the first time. I will open this for comments. We have Mr. Keller, and I believe was here before. Is this Ms. Keller here? Oprah, would you like to come up again, please? Oprah. Right. Okay. I think we have a copy. Is this the one? And I was going to submit that to the record. Good. Why don't you please be seated there, please? I think I have a copy. I believe this is what I have.
I'm Orpha Keller, and this whole thing kind of hit us out of the blue. We're about a mile west of one of your newly approved, apparently, hog confinements, Richland Finishing Farms. We're a mile west of their actual building and less than half a mile from some of the manure fields that they proposed. Now, I'll mention this resolution first. I have a copy of it off the internet. And I couldn't believe when I read that this concern is for public use areas and or watersheds, but there was no mention of the private property, no mention of people's houses, what they're putting up with, the bad effects on just the quality of life. So that's my main concern. I would like to see some recognition that just the ordinary taxpayer like we are, the ordinary homeowner, would have some consideration before these things are approved. And I recently corresponded with Congressman Latham because I got the idea right away that this is not the Iowa Select Farms that we're dealing with. This is a bigger deal, and I have waded around on the internet. It's like a shell game. There are all these different companies that when you go to Iowa Select Farms, something else is suggested. There's a lawyer in Des Moines. I think his name is Michael Blazer. He was appointed by Vilsack. This has been going on for a long time. And when I'm getting down toward the bottom of it, I think I'm finding out that this is something called international agribusiness, and it's in cooperation, the USA and China. Now, my question is, has Iowa been designated to be the manure spot for feeding pork to the Chinese? And that's what I'm going to leave you with. And until somebody comes up with a real answer about who owns these operations, they come out of the blue, somebody builds another one, and nobody's notified, and pretty soon, you know, it's all over the state. I understand that this outfit now has confined feeding of hogs in 43 of the 99 counties. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Deborah? Okay. Okay. How are you? Okay.
Hi, my name is Deborah Bunka, and I live in Ames. And I am with the group that sent the letter out to you to let you know what was happening. We mailed out 56 letters to the residents around the Richland project because most of them did not know that was happening. And that, I have to say, is shameful. I sat and listened at a couple of meetings. I've been to meetings in various counties. Time and again, you have these people, Prestige, other people, moving in, not talking to the neighbors at all, not notifying. They know when the buildings are going up, or they find out, you know, with a couple weeks to go before it's going to happen. And I sit and I listen to comments, particularly by you, Mr. Clinton, that you frame our opposition to these CAFOs as an attack on the family, their way of
Please,
life.
Please, ma'am, you're quoting me incorrectly.
I'm not quoting you. No. I said in the sense of what I heard.
That may be your sense, but that has never been what I said. Okay, so
I
challenge that assertion.
Okay, that's your right to challenge it, just because it's my right to make that
and
assertion.
And I'm willing to listen to you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Their way of life and their ability to make a living. And that's a false argument right from the get-go, because nobody is attacking the family. We're not saying they're not a good Iowa family. We're not attacking their right to raise hogs. But when that is said, that doesn't consider alternative models. It also doesn't consider that maybe that family didn't talk to their neighbors first, which was the case in another Story County situation. And the statements are not an attack on the family, but rather I think they're statements of fact about the demonstrated effects of CAFOs on the environment, on the people that surround them. And a lot of these are built near small towns that not only affect private property but affect schools. They, you know, affect the people there, and people most often complain about the smell, but when in fact the smell is the least of it. It's what's in the air, it's what's in the water, it's what happens to the soil when phosphate testing isn't done.
When, you know, people have seen somebody put manure on that ground in the last 10 years, the testing should be done. It isn't done. There's all sorts of things. And what I would urge you to do is to really put a moratorium on development of CAFOs in this county, because this state is turning into a giant manure dump, and very quickly, and very few of those people that are doing the confinements are small people, are small farmers that are trying to make a living. What they are major agribusiness companies that are coming. They don't live here. They don't care. They put up stuff, ruining the environment. They get money. And they're also, they are small farmers sometimes, but they're small farmers who are basically sharecroppers to those same companies. So I would urge you, you know, next time you have a matrix in front of you, put it down or put a moratorium on it. That's what we need here.
Thank you for your comments. Is there anyone else that would like to address the board on this topic?
I think I would just addressing a lot of points there. One thing that really strikes me, and I think something that we've referred now to the Board of Health, is this idea of notification. I know it was disturbing to me that we don't notify neighbors. People have the right to know what's going on around them, and the right to come, as Orpha did, to come and express their opinion of what's going on. And while we have very limited authority, depending on the number of animals that we're talking about, we are the sounding board. I mean, we are where this information is supposed to funnel through. And so I think your dismay at there not having been notification, I think that's completely appropriate, and it's something that we've asked to have looked into to see if we can put another procedure in place to do that. Because I think notification is where everything starts. So,
to both of the individuals who spoke, as well as members of the audience, after last week's meeting, I indicated that since I serve on the Iowa Association of County Supervisors leadership team, that I would bring this item of consideration and discussion to the statewide supervisors level. I was fortunate enough last Thursday morning to have a copy of the proposal that was before us today. And I shared this with our supervisors exec board while being in Sioux County. And just to get their initial response and reaction a little bit, trying to understand that several years ago throughout the state of Iowa, there was a strong concern raised by citizens in many communities regarding the proliferation of CAFOs coming into the state. And that lasted for a while, and then legislation was put in place, the master matrix, a lot of the other types of things were pretty much done. And then it seemed like there was kind of a lessening of the number of CAFOs that were starting to surface for a period of time. So things just kind of went dormant for a while. But here within the last several months, probably 6 to 8 months, we've seen an infusion of these happening in many communities. And so, rightfully so, citizens like yourselves have voiced concerns. And what was of interest to me was that on our executive board, it just so happens that several members are in the agricultural production business. Some are actual raisers of livestock. But they also recognize that in the state, that depending upon where you live, you're going to find the reaction of the citizenry somewhat different. And yet, in areas that have had little exposure to these confinements, when all of a sudden they are faced with them coming in or being proposed there, this has raised some concerns. Dallas County was one of those more recent ones. There was a lot of citizen input and concern. A proposal was withdrawn, very similar to some of the experiences that we had here in Story County. What was encouraging to me is that the information that is before us gives the county a little bit more leverage than what we've had in the past. And because unless the state legislature is going to change the requirements that are laid out and what the DNR has to go through to approve, then counties will have little or no voice other than what is outlined in the Master Matrix Plan, and that is to basically acknowledge them, and if it falls over the threshold, then the county comes in and has an opportunity to investigate, to fully submit a recommendation, and ultimately the DNR will come back and work with the producer or landowners to see if they can come in compliance. To my knowledge, I don't know where they have actually rejected any of the proposals in the last few years. But what was of interest here is that we identified that from the county point of view, the protection of waterways, public use areas, are areas that the county does have jurisdiction over in terms of our county parks and things of that nature. That protection of these natural areas is probably an area that we could get some attention on the state level to pay a little bit closer attention to than if we just basically took a blanket position of saying that we're opposed to any type of confinement whatsoever. They thought that this was a good step, and it would be something that other counties would be willing to take a look at. It will be proposed to the county supervisors in our fall school. We have on the agenda Chuck is it Gip or who will be coming to talk to the supervisors or a designee from his office, and we are starting the dialogue that needs to take place so that if there is to be any changes in the administration of this, that local supervisors will have more of a direct voice in the process. Currently, right now, since 1995 or 96, that was removed from us. And rightfully so, I don't think supervisors are clamoring to have this become an issue that they want to have the authority to say nay, that they will be able to oppose it. However, I do think that because of citizen concern, they want to be in a position to assist in the evaluation and making certain that if this is allowed to go forward, that it is with that they do follow the rules and regulations. I'm of the opinion that there needs to be something else in place. What happens in the event that there are violations and frequent violations? Are there any provisions that will ever say that an organization will be shut down within a certain amount of time? Currently, right now, those things don't exist. I don't know where this will go. I do think that this is the beginning of opening a dialogue that counties who choose to go down this path will have an opportunity to address concerns that the citizens may have. Is it covering all of what people want? That answer is no. Whether or not this board should come out with a flat moratorium, personally, I would not support that. That's my own personal view, because I believe that agriculture is a way of life in our state, and individual producers also have a right to expand their operations. Hopefully that they will do so in such a way that it will not have a negative impact on their neighbors and so forth. However, there doesn't appear to be a mechanism in place that allows for the inspection or supervision that is sometimes necessary. So this, in my opinion, as I read Supervisor Sanders' proposal, begins a process that I feel that I could start to have further discussion. One of the things that I would hope that this board would ask the Board of Health, Margaret James, our environmental specialist, put together a kind of an outline of what she thought her department could do if the board and the state DNR would be willing to work in partnership with counties. And I thought that was a good first step. But that probably has to be also passed by the Board of Health, I would assume, first of all. But and I hope that Margaret will take that before them for consideration and then bring that back to the board, because if it requires some additional funding to make sure that we can provide the necessary staff time to investigate some of these sites before approval is given, then I think the public will be better served. However, that is not exactly where we are today. With this resolution, it clearly says that the Board of Supervisors plan to evaluate each and every application from this point forward and determine whether it is in compliance. And I think with that, that is going to be a much better situation. And with the notification option that Supervisor Sanders and Supervisor Toot alluded to last week, if we can be sure to notify Iowans when these plans come forth, this will give the public an opportunity to bring whatever concerns that they have, and then all of that then could be forwarded to the DNR as part of a collective effort on the part of all of us. So to make so in summary, you know, I share your frustration. I understand it. But I also, I guess from my own personal background, you know, individuals who are in the production area also have certain rights and responsibilities as well. And as long as they follow those guidelines and rules that are laid out, then for me to just blankly say, no, they shouldn't allow to operate, I think then I'm not being sensitive to their rights as well. So where do you draw the line? Because if 60 or 70 people say they're opposed to something for the smell or other areas, which is a concern, is that enough in itself to deny it, or are there other mitigating factors that could have a more negative impact? That would be part of the equation. The fact that we would vote and say no doesn't stop the process. It just simply puts the Board of Supervisors in a position to say that we're opposed to the development. But I do think that public input is important, and I would not want to minimize the fact that for some, and you made a statement earlier that talked about some of our producers have called us and told us that certain individuals have almost issued death threats and been very violent towards them because of their position. Not everyone is willing to sit down and have a civil discussion with producers about how they can mitigate the impact of what they're doing. And it's because of that issue in itself, I think we need to be sensitive to the fact that we do need to be able to have the opportunity to work with individuals to see if we can coexist to some degree. And as a supervisor, that is the position that I take. That was the position that I took when I accepted this position, that I would represent all of the people of Story County, not just those who are the most vocal. Now, you can agree or you can disagree, but that's my position. I see you have a hand there. please come up.
My name is Jonan Tweet. I'd be about a mile and a half from this Richmond or whatever confinement. Just some thoughts that come to me. We seem to allow the freedom for the hogs to be confined, but yet no freedom of the humans to not be confined. Yes, we would be confined. It is almost a death threat to us that are so confined. We talk about maybe a nay for public use, but what about the private use? We go to public areas sometimes to get away from, you know, the things at home, but yet sometimes we're 24 hours, you know, living and sleeping in our own homes with that smell constantly. I do some teaching and, in the backyard, educational of pioneers coming to Iowa and our history of this wonderful land, but it's not something I'm going to be able to continue to do because as they schedule, I'm not going to know what, you know, what the weather is. With the no notification reminds me of the flash mobs we're hearing about. They come in and take, you know, go out of the stores, Walmart or whatever, 300 of them. I think we're getting flash hogs. They're not notifying. When I gave tests, I always put on the top. There's always going to be one question you can get right, true or false. One of your greatest assets is consideration of other people. We have certainly lost that. And I think we've got to start thinking of the private people who have come for fresh air and so forth. And I could probably go on, but I'm glad you're opening, you know, to thinking more. But I do think it's a serious problem. You know, people are coming into the state and tourists are noticing. You know, they try to get away from smog and they come here and it smells. You know, Iowa is really becoming contaminated. And I think there can be alternative places for some of these hog confinements to go. It needs to maybe be off in the desert. But, and, you know, there are many things. I've taught in health and foods and family living and so forth. And the contamination in the air and so forth, it's not just the water. And I challenge you, and maybe you have. I know when I taught in certain areas, I was to go into the families or go into areas that were questionable to find out myself, you know, to go into homes of students as a vocational teacher at one time. And I'd go in, and there would be homes where the hogs were right in there with them. And it did help me understand. And I would suggest that you go and spend an hour, you know, near a hog confinement. As I drove here, I came by and smelled for 2 miles the foul smell of a large operation that I think is going from 3,000, I'm thinking, I'm not sure, from 3,000 head of cattle to 5,000. And I'm sure Nevada does experience that. I experience that slightly, especially if I'm coming this way, but I also experience north of where I live. And so in the winter, when I need fresh air, that's one of my health requirements for Lyme's disease. I just need a lot of fresh air. And so I can open my windows some nights, and I have another setup on the other side, very nice people, and a private setup. They have put it on their own property, but then I have to quickly close the window many nights, and I'm just wondering what's going to happen coming the other direction. Am I really going to have to consider to move? You know, there'll be many effects to people. It'll be mental, social, you know, emotional, and physical. So I really think, I'm really glad that you are listening, because we can't always get to the legislatures. I've chosen not to have a computer, but I read and try and find out, so I'm not up on everything. But thank you for what you're doing, and I hope we can make a difference in this state. We need to. We really need to.
Well, I think each of us have taken the opportunity over the past year or so to go out and visit some of the operations that are in our county, and we will continue to do so. While I was in Sioux Center this weekend, I had the pleasure of touring several of the large cattle feeding operations. One in particular is involved in genetic cloning of cattle for looking at things that pharmaceutical companies will be able to have to fight off a lot of the disease. This was quite an operation. There were several up there that have large number of cattle available, and I also had a chance to tour a couple of the feeding operations that had hogs and so forth in that area. And in talking to the supervisors there, in certain parts of the country, in northwest Iowa, this has more or less become part of the normal way of life, and people have been able to adapt to this. However, areas that have not had the large concentration of feeding operations, and all of a sudden when we began to see that, it is a change for many of us, and there are very good reasons why we would ask the legislature to at least try to encourage the latest scientific information out there possible to mitigate many of these factors that will impact the health and welfare of those that are living around those areas. Right now, that's not the case. But hopefully through citizens' input, and through maybe the legislature recognizing that some change might be necessary, some things will occur. But this is the first step, and I will assure you that I think this board is trying to take the step that the citizens of Story County will not be blindsided when these operations come in, and we will take every precaution necessary to make sure that they are following the guidelines that are laid out.
In fact, Ms. Tweet, I believe the cattle operation that you refer to, we're out there tomorrow for 2 hours, I think. So
24 hours.
Yeah, absolutely. But we're out there a couple hours tomorrow. I mean, it is something we're committed to getting out and exploring. And I think, like Wayne said, I mean, when I drafted this resolution, it's intended as getting more in the game than we're in right now and than we've been allowed to be in, and it is not the solution, but it hopefully it's a step along the road to resolution. Ultimately, like it or not, it does rest with the state legislature. I mean, it just does. That's where the rules are going to be made, and we're going to have to follow what's laid out in front of us. And with that, I move approval of Resolution 1307.
Wait just a minute. We had a...
Yeah, I don't mean to cut you off. Oh. I'm just wanting to keep us moving on.
Please come up. Please.
Thank you. I'll keep this very brief. Susie Petra Ames. I think I'm fairly well informed, but I was mortified when I learned that Story County had over 40 CAFOs, confined animal feeding lots. That, I think, would surprise a great many people who feel we are informed, but that is a number that I was not aware of until recently. I do believe that the protection of the health of the Story County people, as well as the health of our land and our water, should be of paramount importance to our elected officials. And I do urge you to consider moratoriums and also what you can do for having serious consequences on violators. And I thank you for looking into this.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. So are there any other comments before we... Yes, please come right up. Okay.
Janine Carruthers, Ames. It occurs to me that citizen resistance and governmental resistance, as far as you're permitted to go, may be what's required to get the industry to invest in finding the biochemical and other methods that will cause the problem to disappear. But as long as they can dump with impunity, and 40 is a shocking number, and that's the least expensive thing to do, that's what's going to happen. So even though your resistance may be symbolic, a lot of symbols can inspire action.
I thought I saw one other. Yeah, it should have been back there. Okay.
My name is Lloyd Rasmussen.
I live out by the Hickory Grove Lake. My father built a lake out there in 1960. It seems like over the years, they were more worried about water conservation 50 years ago than we are today. They built that lake for water. Hickory Grove, for recreation and water. All right, we're in a drought now. The rivers are dry. What are we going to do, suck the water out of lagoons? My lake's going to be contaminated if that goes in over there. Where are we going to get water? The rivers are dry. We've got to protect these watersheds. I don't think we're doing it. I think 50 years ago we were more concerned about it than we are today. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Again, on behalf of the board, we want to thank you, all of you, for your input. As painful as it may appear, or your thought that maybe we're not as sensitive to your concerns, we want to assure you that we really are sensitive to what you're saying, and we will take forth your message as we discuss it further over the next few months. So with that, I will roll call Sanders to your resolution.
Need a second.
I'll second it.
I thought, I'm sorry, Paul. We have a motion and a second. Further discussion? I think we've kind of heard quite a bit already. So with that, Sanders?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Aye. Clinton? Aye. Resolution 1307. And I will continue to want to get this on the agenda statewide for our supervisors and for our legislators to continue to address this in the upcoming session. So, thank you.
And while Lucy and Stacy are coming up, I'm actually late for a meeting over at the City of Nevada, so as soon as they're done, I'm going to leave the rest of it to you guys.
Great. Good. Okay.
We will be quick.
All right. Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Hi there.
I just want to
know how to keep a crowd.
Yeah, no one wants to talk about TIF. I already knew that. I just wanted to let you know about something that we talked about at my affiliate meeting last week in Council Bluffs. The legislature did pass House File 2460 this last session. It has to do with TIF reporting. It goes into effect this year. There are certain penalties that do not go into effect until next year. But I just wanted to let you know what we know already, as is the case with some other legislation in the past this year. They're meeting on August 15th to kind of hammer out the details and how we will actually do this reporting. We have to electronically file with the Department of Management December 1st of every year, and that's every taxing entity that has an urban renewal area, TIF districts, which includes the county, and also 10 cities within Story County. It's a shorter list to say who doesn't have a TIF. That's Gilbert, Kelly, Zering, and Collins. All other cities do have TIF districts. So just really shortly, right now you certify debt to the auditor every year December 1st. Now you actually have to certify your urban renewal report, which includes your plan, money that you've spent, money that you expect to spend, dollars spent on where, and also like any amendments that you do should have to be passed. Those do not have to go through the Planning and Zoning Commission. And I'm sorry if I'm all over the place, but like I say, they haven't hammered out the details yet. So this has to go through a vote of the board. So we're going to work that into your timeline. I'm coming to you now because we're going to be extremely busy this fall.
You got something going on this fall?
As you are probably well aware, there's a general election on November 6th.
Is there?
We're going to go from that immediately into both budget season for you at the board, also evaluation season for us. And this is part of the evaluation process. It's due December 1st. Because I anticipate that Stacy will be getting questions from all 10 of our TIF cities, I would like us to go through our county process first. That will also help us advise them. They certify to us. We're kind of their file drawer. So we're going to reach out to them and say, if you need copies of anything, please come see us. we have, with the turnover in city clerks, some of them might not have access, or their files might not be as good as we would like them to be. So.
Yeah, you said August 15th is the meeting date.
Right. So can that's a work group that statewide work group is going to work on, you know, how to codify this legislation and get back to the counties to say this is what, and the cities, this is what the electronic report filed will look like.
So we should have more information coming out of that meeting. I think it works perfectly, because as I look at our schedules, kind of after we get past the middle of August is when we're all here the rest of the fall. So I would encourage you to make sure that we have something on our agenda for that first meeting after the meeting on the 15th. And then I'd like to suggest that Stacy and one of us, and I'll be glad to do it since I kind of push this forward, sit down with Jessica Reynolds, our new civil attorney.
Right. I know Steve Owen had worked on the plan.
Yeah, I mean, we lost a wealth of information of kind of what we had gone through with Steve Owen. We need to get Jessica up to speed and just make sure that we one of our goals this summer was to set our timeline process for considering TIF. We never got it done, so we're going to be moving ahead kind of.
I think this dovetails really nicely with what you had always planned to do. Yep. Now it's, you know, legally required. What the advice that we got for best practice is kind of after every budget session in March that you go ahead and pass a resolution, you make any TIF amendments there, and then you update your report so that you can then certify that or pass that and give that to the auditor's office by December 1st. So it will just become part of your cycle. Along with the budget cycle, and we've asked for a sample resolution of what that might look like as well.
All right. So then I would just ask, is it acceptable to this board and Lucy, to you, since I'm asking for Stacy, if me and Stacy set a meeting with Jessica for sometime like on the 16th or 17th, which is that Thursday, Friday, and then we come back that next Tuesday, which would be, what, the 21st maybe? We have this on our agenda and try to lay out how we're going to deal with it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we're in really good shape. Our TIF is new. We've kept good track. So I don't know, Stacy, do you have anything to add?
He's hoping that he'll have it done by the end, and if he does, that's the tentative date. So that will be a little flexible, but it's a timetable.
I just the penalties don't go into effect this year, but if we don't file the report properly, it also becomes part of our annual audit that we comply with the TIF regulations. But they will the DOM, the penalty is that they won't certify their taxes back to us, so that we can run the tax list and collect property taxes every year. So it's pretty severe penalties if we don't comply with this.
You have access to my calendar?
I will get access to your calendar.
I have access to your calendar.
Okay, yeah.
Get that set up, and I'll check with Jessica.
Perfect, thanks. Okay. Thank you, guys.
Okay. Right, see you later.
Any other questions?
No. Thank you. We're looking to get back.
We'll have more later.
Right, I wanted to get this out in front of us well before December 1st, because there's a lot of other stuff going on.
We kind of ended up in a time crunch last year.
Yeah.
Trying to get this all done, and so.
Oh.
Okay, moving on then to the agenda. No agency reports, departmental reports, none. Liaison assignments, Paul, this is that fifth week, so pass also. Public forum number two, Mr. Eggers is no longer here, so is there anyone else that would like to speak? Okay, so announcement from the supervisors. Pass. Motion to adjourn. I would seek a motion.
I'll make that motion.
All right, I will second it. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Meeting is adjourned. Aye. 7:16.